welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Devin.
And I'm Sarah.
We are back. Sarah, when are we recording right now?
Well, it's definitely peak vampire time for me because it's dark. Well, it's always dark in the room I'm in because I'm pretty much, because of my headache issues, I'm confined to a dark room. But we're actually recording on Sunday night. We're trying a new thing because we want to make sure we get our episodes out earlier in the day on Mondays and Thursdays. We are recording at night. It's a very different vibe. I did tell Devin before we recorded, you know, it's nighttime, sun's down, we're feeling a little more mellow. So let's look out for not being low energy. Sad.
Yeah, no, it's a really good point. It is sometimes difficult to keep the energy up when it's the evening. So.
Yes. Yeah, so we're going to do our fucking best.
Treat it like a party. Like,
I know.
Woo, party.
This is Hellbent After Hours. But like
Hellbent After Hours. Well, considering I spent my very exciting Saturday night sewing, I think everyone can tell that I lead the party life.
Oh, yeah. No, I spend my Saturday nights now listening to podcasts. So
yeah. Ooh. Slow down.
This is 30. Devin, before we jump into our show, I really wanted to talk very briefly with you about the Women's March and their announcement around Bernie Sanders, because we did very, very briefly touch on it on our last podcast because it had happened that morning, but a lot has transpired since then. And for those who don't know what happened, essentially, the Women's March group, they're doing a women's convention, in Detroit, and, they announced Senator Sanders as a speaker, and the article they tweeted out said he was a headliner. So a lot of women reacted very strongly, not only, I think mainly because a white man was given a headliner spot, but also it was this particular person who seems very eager to compromise on reproductive rights for political expediency. So there's lots of feelings. So how did you feel about all this?
Well, I mean, first of all, I clearly wasn't happy. When I read the article, I was like, really? Really? Mm-hmm. This is what we're going to do? This is the line we're going to take? Sure.
Right.
So I was definitely not happy about it. But the more that I found out about the story, is it really felt more like maybe not a super solid decision and then a botched PR response.
That's the thing. I actually feel like the aftermath of the decision was more disappointing for me.
It's a weird choice. And, you know, at the same time, it's like, well, it's their choice. They get to make it. Mm-hmm. Like, don't go if you don't want to go, you know?
Yeah, definitely. So, anyway, we wanted to chat through that at the top of the show because we had some thoughts and feelings and let us know how you feel. But Devin, why don't you take us through what our show will be today? Because we do have a lot to cover.
Yes, we do. So first, we're going to jump into listener feedback and updates, as always. Next, we are going to jump into the hashtag Women Boycott Twitter sort of event. So a little bit of context. Friday, October 13th, this sort of boycott happened where women logged off of Twitter for 24 hours. And we're going to talk about that and sort of the complicated political ramifications of that. Block three is kind of a hodgepodge of stories. We're going to talk about healthcare, and there's a couple of different healthcare stories. There's been two executive orders that Trump signed, and then a Health and Human Services draft plan that are all sort of coming at us from the healthcare side. And then we're going to talk about the Iran deal and sort of that story and what that sort of means. So the Iran deal, it's a complicated story, and I think it'd be worth to take some time to really talk through it. There's a lot going on there. Then block four, we're going to get into our gratitude check, which is sorely needed as always. Block five, we have Dick Wad of the Week, and this one really pissed me off.
Yes. Yeah, Devin had some feelings.
I did.
As do I.
And then block six, last but not least, we've got some action items, so something that you can do after you listen to the show.
All right, Devin, why don't we jump right into listener feedback? So, you know, there was a thread that one of our Hellions tagged us in about Harvey Weinstein. So can you take us through what Karen had to say?
Yes. So she said, quote, I want to talk about Weinstein's actual story, not what people are saying or critiquing others for saying, because this is super important, too. In response to allegations, a sentence jumps out at me. Mr. Weinstein believes all these relationships were consensual, because as a part of the rape culture endemic to society, if you don't fight or yell, if you say no weakly, or if you say no, but after coercion you give up and stop resisting advances, then your no didn't count. Then your no meant yes. In our culture, people are inundated with this message.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. You know, and even in some of the stories that were coming out from Weinstein's accusers, there was a few that they were like, after a while, I just relented. Because
or like they engage in that sort of negotiation that they were describing, mm-hmm. where he'd be like, okay, well, don't do this, but then just do this, and like, no, don't do that, just sit here, and all, and it gets to a point where, you know, just to get the situation moving along, to get out of the situation, mm-hmm. you start negotiating,
right,
you know, which is really it's a gross thing that happens, and
shitty position to be put in,
and then that's used as justification or saying, oh, it was consensual because you engaged in this negotiation that you felt you had to do to keep yourself safe.
Like, I also have a very hard time. He truly believes it's consensual.
Oh, like, he does not.
I mean, I think that there are men who probably engage in similar tactics and do so. But like, yeah, I have a hard time believing that Weinstein believes that. But yeah, like even that like NYPD audio, you hear it so clearly.
Right.
Like he's trying to get that woman in his room and he's using those coercion tactics. And it's like that shit is so real. And I think that was a really, really good point that Karen brought up, because there's a lot to unpack there with manipulation and consent.
Yes, absolutely. And so our second piece of feedback is actually from our October 2nd episode about gun control. And I loved what this person had to say. WTL emailed and said, quote, I was just listening to this October 2nd episode and you brought up the, quote, now isn't the time comment we all see repeated every single time this kind of insane violence takes place. Every single time you hear, quote, now is not the time, that's someone speaking on behalf of the NRA. They never want to discuss gun control. And every time we frame it that way, be it in the U.S., Canada, where I am, or elsewhere, firearm safety is what we need to be talking about. We do not talk about car control. We talk about automotive safety. Using the term gun control just plays right into the hand of the NRA's membership, who are convinced that the government is coming for their guns. The specificity of words has power, and it's time for people who want to stop the senseless deaths by firearms to start using that tool. And I just really liked that. Mm-hmm. I liked how they put that.
Yeah. No, I think that's a really good point. It's almost like our listeners are really fucking smart. I will counter with that and say that part of me wants to double down and be like, fuck yeah, I want to take your fucking guns away. We have way too many guns in this country. So yeah, I want to come door to door and collect all your shit, because we really don't need that many guns in our country.
It's true. We really don't. But I am going to agree with this listener, because that's not going to work. Mm-hmm. Right. It's just not.
Yeah. And it's like that, you know, a lot of people have sort of used this example as, you know, in order to operate a vehicle, you know, not only do we have to get a license, but we have, you know, the car, we have to make sure the car has like seat belts and airbags. Right. Like there's all these regulations to make people more safe. And that, like, that's not controversial, but somehow gun reform, or, you know, what she says, firearm safety, is controversial.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that's why I like it, is because it's framing it in this sort of, in this framework that's used for things that aren't controversial, right? Gun control can definitely be an incendiary phrase, right? Like, you're going to come for my guns. So, you know, kind of separating those two rhetorics is, I think, a smart move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I'm like, yeah, I do want to come for your guns. That's true.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. And that might be true, but politically, that's not going to get us anywhere. Yeah, so
probably right. Okay. So let's get on to a couple of updates on our end, and then we'll jump right into the show. So we've talked about her before, but we've officially added another member to Hellbent HQ. So that is a woman named Varsha. Shout out to Varsha. She's been a really huge help with our research, especially with me not being able to be back at full strength and not being able to contribute to the outline. And she's been an amazing help. So
yes, I think I literally called her a beautiful angel from heaven. Like in an email.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot of work for Devin to have to do all by herself, yeah, you know, two times a week. So it's a huge help to have Varsha. So shout out again to Varsha. Okay, so finally, we are going to do our much promised Hillary Clinton What Happened bonus Patreon. Again, yes. we haven't been able to do it as quick as we want to because I've been a vampire. And we're going to do it next week, sometime next yes. week, the week of the 23rd.
Yes. So that's very exciting. And then finally, as we talked about a little bit at the top of the show, we're now recording in the evening so that we can get the episodes out a little bit earlier. And so that I'm not editing like a golem for, you know, right after we record.
Yeah.
So please remember to subscribe to us on iTunes so that you get a notification when the new episode does come out, because hopefully that will be earlier in the day than it has been previously.
Hey, Devin, you know what makes me feel really fucking confident?
A whole bunch of badass ladies running for office.
Oh, I mean, yeah, for sure. You know that gives me life. You know I love it. But also when I'm wearing a badass statement necklace from Bauble Bar.
Yeah, they have some really fantastic pieces. And my 2017 aesthetic is just going and picking out the coolest, like biggest earrings that I can find that I yes. know some man in my life is going to tell me they hate, but that make me feel so good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't really listen to men anymore. That's like a thing of the past.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So like you just do you get all the earrings and necklaces and rings and accessories that you fucking want from Bauble Bar. You just go for it.
Exactly. I just bought these pink tassel earrings that almost hit my shoulders and I love them.
Yes. And you know what's extra awesome is that shipping within the United States is free, and it's also super easy to make returns if you want to.
Yeah, and their customer service is super friendly and helpful, and you get to talk to a real person.
Yes. It's not like on Twitter where you're like never really sure if you're talking to a Russian bot or not anymore.
Oh, too soon.
It's like, are you a dickwad? Are you a bot? Really hard. I can't tell. Can't really tell.
Yes. So if you want to pick out a couple of pieces that make you feel confident and stylish, go to bauble bar.com today and use promo code HELLBENT to get 20% off. That's Bauble Bar, BAUBLEBAR.com, and use promo code HELLBENT for 20% off.
All right, Devin, so let's get into our first little section here, which was the hashtag Women Boycott Twitter event that happened mm-hmm. this past Friday. So can you take us through sort of the background behind that, the context behind it, and then sort of, you know, what happened with that?
Yes, yes. Okay, so basically what spurred this, as far as, you know, I understand and what we understand, is that actress Rose McGowan was suspended from Twitter, ostensibly for being vocal about her sexual harassment and then speaking out against Harvey Weinstein and his enablers and people like Ben Affleck.
She said, fuck off, Ben Affleck, which is right. was a great tweet.
Which is great, you know.
Yeah.
The whole idea behind Women Boycott Twitter was that her account was suspended for basically speaking out about her sexual harassment. And they wanted to bring light to the unfair treatment of women on Twitter, as well as make commentary about how women's online harassment and abuse are largely ignored.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I think this is a noble pursuit, and I like the idea, and I understand where the people are coming from, but there obviously have been some sort of issues and pushback on this. So
yeah, so there was a lot of women of color who were pointing out that there was, you know, no larger push for a boycott when women of color have been openly harassed on Twitter. So that, you know, mm-hmm. Leslie Jones being harassed by folks like Milo, and then like Jemele Hill, like they're like, right. Where's the solidarity for Jemele Hill? And I thought right. Ava DuVernay put it really well. She said, quote, calling white women allies to recognize the conflict of hashtag women boycott Twitter for women of color who haven't received support on similar issues.
So I think that's an important sort of point. And I think, Sarah, that's why you and I ultimately did not participate in yeah. Women Boycott Twitter. So do you want to talk a little bit about how you kind of thought through that.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. I thought that there were valid reasons to participate still, and I also thought there were lots of valid reasons not to participate. And you know, as we sort of mentioned, a lot of women of color raised that issue of, you know, basically that solidarity is for white women. A woman named Mickey Kendall wrote a piece in The Guardian about that in 2013. And so obviously this issue continues to persist. And, you know, we had folks like April Rain, who created really awesome hashtags during the day on Friday, like hashtag WOC affirmation, to sort of amplify and uplift women of color who, you know, have made an impact on people's lives. For me, the reason why I chose not to participate is I think ultimately it just didn't feel right. I was like, you know, I felt like the overarching issues with solidarity being for white women didn't sit right with me. So, you know, I really liked what Ashley Ford had to say in Refinery 29. She wrote a piece about why she didn't do the boycott. And she said, quote, "The women who are boycotting Twitter today are not bad or wrong. The women who have decided not to boycott Twitter today are not bad or wrong. This isn't a moment to make accusations of divisiveness or maliciousness. This is a moment to recognize when the women with the most power forget or choose not to organize with those who have the least." Yeah. And that really resonated with me. And I think there was also really interesting conversations around not silencing yourself as well.
Okay, so this is where I want to jump in a little bit.
Yeah.
Because what I will say is I completely understand that line of thinking. But I do think that sometimes boycotting is the loudest scream you have, right? Mm-hmm. Especially in a capitalist society, we talk about, you know, grab your wallets, like boycotting, you know, companies or industries that, you know, hitting the advertisers. That's ultimately what got Bill O'Reilly out of Fox News.
Right.
I think boycotting, I understand where people are saying, like, don't silence yourself, but I think that boycotting is not exactly silencing yourself. It's using your voice differently.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think, you know, there were women who were like, you know, I'm not silencing myself. It's not like I'm not going to, you know, talk elsewhere. Like, I'm going to Facebook, I'm going to Instagram, whatever. Right.
So I also decided not to participate. And the sort of middle road that I sort of took is I decided that I was going to only use Twitter to talk about, you know, sort of women being abused online, starting those conversations. I spent a lot of time on the WOC affirmation hashtag and finding new voices, mm-hmm. new women of color to follow, to amplify. I donated to some Patreons and some PayPal me's and all that kind of stuff. And that's how I chose to use that time instead of boycotting.
Mm-hmm.
But I boycotted insofar that I was like, I'm not going to use Twitter as I normally would. Mm-hmm. Right. I think that it's for me, that was
more intentional. You were more intentional about your use of Twitter.
Exactly. Exactly. And that was the way that I boycotted.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No. Yeah. And like I said, and you know, through Ashley Ford's writing, I think that there were totally valid reasons to boycott. I also think there were totally valid reasons not to boycott. I think that as white women, we have to really think about when and where and how strongly we show up for certain women versus not show up for other women. I think that's just something that we really have to introspect about, because it continues to be an issue. So, I think there was a lot of really good and interesting conversations around this boycott.
You know, so then Jack Dorsey, the CEO of Twitter, actually responded to the boycott.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I'm going to read a statement because I think it's important, but I'm just going to preface it with, it's a whole bunch of horse shit.
Yeah, I wasn't super impressed either.
I was not. But he said, quote, "We see voices being silenced on Twitter every day. We've been working to counteract this for the past 2 years. Yeah, right. Fuck you. We prioritized this in 2016. Yeah, right. Fuck you. We updated our policies and increased the size of our teams. It wasn't enough, obviously.
There's some editorializing here.
No. In 2017, we made it our top priority and made a lot of progress. Bullshit. Today, we saw voices silencing themselves and voices speaking out because we're still not doing enough. Of course, you jackass. We've been working intensely over the past few months and are focused today on making some critical decisions. Oh, goody. We decided to take a more aggressive stance in our rules and how we enforce them. New rules around unwanted sexual advances, non-consensual nudity, hate symbols, violent groups, and tweets that glorify violence. I'm only laughing there because the fact that they don't already have things in place for this is disgusting.
And it's like you literally have verified Nazis on your platform. Like,
yeah,
your words are kind of empty for me right now.
Yeah, I'm not laughing because it's funny. I'm laughing because
it's ridiculous.
This is fucking ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. And like to say that they prioritized it in 2016, I'm like, y'all have been around for a lot longer than that. And also, I did not see that high priority like at all.
So the tweet that Rose McGowan was suspended over, the justification given was that she included a private phone number in the tweet, and that goes against terms of service,
which we agree with. That's probably
which we agree with.
Good. Yes.
Right. Exactly. Like, that's totally fine. But then Natalie Shore, this woman, tweeted in response, quote, "Some alt-right dickbag tweeted my phone number last winter, and when I reported it, Twitter denied it was a violation of terms of service."
Yep.
So clearly there are some, like, uneven application of the terms of service here,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. And I think that's what I also think got people really pissed about this,
mm-hmm,
is, you know, the reasons that they're giving for suspending people are not applied evenly or with any sense, even logic.
It's a joke. I mean, there's so many ridiculous things that haven't gotten people suspended, and then, you know, the only reason why, you know, action gets taken after the fact is like someone with a fairly significant Twitter following will be like, hey, this person tweeted a gun picture at me and it basically threatened my life, like, why is this not a terms of service? And then it gets retweeted enough that it eventually gets escalated, and then they handle these cases ad hoc. But clearly you can't handle everything ad hoc because it's fucking broken. Like, you have to have better policies in place.
Exactly. I mean, like you said, anyone who has a gun picture of a gun tweeted at them in a threatening way, you know, should get some sort of response. But it ultimately only happens if you have a significant Twitter following. Mm-hmm. And that's completely unacceptable. Yeah.
All right, Devin. So let's move on to some Trumpland bullshit.
Oh. Ooh, is this the return of the permablock?
The return of the permablock. Yep. We haven't said Trumpland bullshit in a while, I feel like. But in this section, we want to talk about something that's happening on the domestic policy front around healthcare. So a couple of different executive orders, like Devin had referenced at the top. And then we're going to get into foreign policy and talk about the Iran deal. So let's get started with healthcare. So what the fuck is Trump trying to fuck up this time?
Oh, God. You know, it's so much. It's so much. So we're going to
talk about that. That's our whole podcast. It's just, it's so much. The end. So bye.
So it's actually a set of two executive orders that he signed in quick succession. So let's talk about one first. So the first one ends the cost sharing reduction payments, so also known as CSRs. So if you've seen CSR thrown around, that's what this is referring to.
Right.
And what CSRs are designed to do is to keep insurance premiums low for low-income populations. So on Thursday night, the Trump administration said that it was ending this program, and they wouldn't be paying the subsidies anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So this is basically sending the health insurance exchanges into, you know, turmoil is a very gentle way to put it, but they're basically freaking the hell out.
Yeah.
Because, you know, these CSRs are kind of lifeblood to these insurance plans staying affordable for low income citizens.
Right.
So, and what's really fucked up about all of this is that it's estimated that ending this program, so ending the CSRs, will lead to A, immediate spikes in premiums and push some insurers out of the market completely.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also projected to cost the government $2.3 billion, with a B, more dollars than not ending the CSR program.
Again, like most things that we talk about now, this doesn't make any good policy sense in any regard. Like, I mean, literally doesn't make any fucking sense.
Honestly, so, you know, just quick recap real fast. It makes it harder for poor people to afford healthcare, and it costs the government more money. This is so clearly not about deficit spending, so do not let your racist uncle tell you otherwise, because this is adding to the deficit. This is putting more financial burden on the federal government.
Yeah. And what's really weird, too, is that Trump has not specified when the CSR payments would be ending.
Yes.
So that sort of is adding to the panic and unease that is felt by both consumers in the healthcare exchange, but also insurers.
Oh, yeah. Insurers are freaking the hell out. I mean, consumers are too, obviously. Right. But what's interesting is that, you know, the insurance providers are not happy with this.
Right. You know what's really wild, you know, speaking of people who might try to tell you that this makes good policy sense? 70% of the people who will be affected by ending CSRs live in states that voted for Trump. So that's
super interesting. I mean,
so they're like, it's like Republicans are totally cool with trying to do something in or at least Trump is, in order to try to like score some political points on the right. But then he's hurting the very people that voted for him. And if I were a betting woman, I would say those people are still going to fucking vote for him.
I am a betting woman, and I know that they will.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, it's just, you know, we're looking at premium spikes of between 20 and 50%. And that number is so, like, that range is so huge because we just don't know. Mm-hmm. Like you said, mm-hmm. he hasn't specified a time period in which these will end. He hasn't really given any details whatsoever. So people are just freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
And all of this will be laid right at the feet of the people who voted for Trump. And right. I think more sickeningly, it'll be laid at the feet of people who didn't vote for Trump and didn't want this.
Yeah.
And, you know, what's also interesting is of the 10 states with the highest percentage of consumers that benefit from CSRs, all but one went for Trump.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, it's not just like, it's a huge number. It's a huge number.
It's a bananas con that Republicans yes. run, where yes. they just fuck over their voters economically in all kinds of different ways. At least the, you know, lower income voters. You know, not as much as people want to think that Trump's base is the white working class. He got a lot of rich people too. Like yeah. a lot of rich people voted for him. But, you know, it's like they'll do things that fuck over these lower income voters economically. Those people will still vote for Trump. They'll still vote yes. for Republicans. It is quite the con.
It really is. And, you know, it's hard because also, in addition to this ending the CSRs costing the government money, it is causing these premiums to spike.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if he hadn't ended the CSRs, you know, premiums would have risen by about 10%, but no more. Everybody loses.
Literally, this makes no sense. Like, there's no good reason to do this. You're fucking over everyone, essentially.
Like, I'm literally trying to explain it, and I can't, because it really makes no sense.
Well, it makes sense in the way that Trump just wants to undo every signature piece of legislation or
right.
achievement that Obama has made during his presidency. That's all this presidency is about. That's literally all this is about, is he wants to undo the legacy of President Obama. He doesn't fucking care what it means, how it'll affect people, how it'll affect the fucking markets. He just wants to erase Obama. That's all it is.
Well, yeah. Well, and King Douchebag himself, Steve Bannon, admitted that Trump ending the CSRs was a way to, quote, blow up the Obamacare exchanges and make prices skyrocket.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, obviously, but that he's admitting it so openly is, you know, great.
Pretty gross. Yeah.
And Trump has said many times before that his approach to the ACA repeal is to, quote, this is a direct quote, let it implode, yep. then negotiate.
Yeah.
So it's never been about healthcare for the masses. It's about the sort of like political dance that he's doing and what he's doing to kind of sabotage what he thinks is, you know, an unacceptable thing.
Unacceptable because Obama did it. That's how deep it is. That's really.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And, you know, what's interesting is that 18 states and the District of Columbia, so those attorneys general, have already begun the legal fight against this. So shout out to those states.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so they're challenging it in court. And yes. so we'll see what happens there.
Yeah. So there's kind of like a two-pronged attack to this, depending on which state. You know, some states are taking a slightly different tack. Some are, you know, suing outright, and some are filing injunctions to make sure that they keep paying the CSRs until this whole thing is worked out. You know, and the states are rightly concerned about the sort of rising number of uninsured residents, you know, if healthcare costs skyrocket like this. So
if we just don't pay these CSRs, then premiums go up, the markets are unstable and people suffer and die.
Yeah, right. Exactly. You have to have a plan. You know, the thing is, so I said that there were a pair of executive orders.
Oh, yeah. So what's next on the fucking shit platter?
The shit platter. So the other thing is that he has signed an executive order allowing people to buy sort of bare bones policies at a cheaper cost.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a huge thing with the ACA, is that you couldn't buy these like very skimpy plans, because the whole idea was that everyone pays into a shared pool and that keeps rates stable for everyone.
Right. Yeah. So if you incentivize quote unquote healthy people to buy these bare bones plans, then there isn't as many other people buying the more expensive plans that help sort of subsidize everyone and balance everything out. So these two executive orders essentially are destabilizing, are, you know, have the likelihood of destabilizing the shit out of everything. So,
yeah.
And for no good reason.
For no good reason. No, I mean, good reason. That's the thing.
This doesn't make any sense.
I mean, they're not saving money, so I don't know why they, you know, I don't know how they can justify this to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So those were sort of the things that are happening on the Trump side. And then, you know, let's just like round out this shit pie trifecta. So the HHS has a strategic plan draft. So I didn't know what a strategic plan was, so I had to look this up. Every 4 years, the Health and Human Services creates like sort of like a mission statement. Right. And to kind of, you know, its directives or what it's going to do over the next 4 years. So right now they're drafting the strategic plan that will go from 2018 to 2022. So in the Obama era, so currently the HHS plan says, quote, HHS accomplishes its mission through programs and initiatives that cover a wide spectrum of activities, serving and protecting Americans at every stage of life. That's what it says.
Mm-hmm.
So this new strategic plan draft opens with very similar language. It says HHS accomplishes its mission through programs and initiatives that cover a wide spectrum of activities, serving and protecting Americans at every stage of life, beginning at conception.
Yeah, so they're essentially low-key defining life as beginning at conception. They like really thought they could slide that in there. And
I was
going
to say, like, way
it.
To where are you to bury the lead, assholes? Like.
And this is not an innocuous.
No, this is not like, oh, ha, 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 we're just going to throw that in because it's cute.
It's
like, no,
not. And I thought there, you know, Bustle had a great quote here. So they said, quote, beginning at conception is not simply an innocuous addition to the new draft. It is a purposefully used rhetorical device that can and most likely will be used against women, particularly low income individuals seeking birth control. And we already have proof of such a move from Donald Trump's presidency, as on Friday, reports indicated that the administration decided to step back from an Obama-era federal mandate that requires employers to cover employees' birth control. So it's like multi-pronged attack on women from all fucking sides.
I know. So that was, you know, so if, again, you weren't ready to rage quit your life before... You're welcome.
Yeah, but please don't rage quit your life, because we need people to fight against this shit.
Okay, Sarah, so now that we've talked about domestic policy, let's move on to some foreign policy and what's going on with the Iran deal. So can you kind of tell us what's going on with that?
Yeah, so before we jump into what's currently happening, I think we should give a little quick rundown as to what is actually in the Iran deal. So according to the joint statement in Switzerland, the P5 plus one, so P5 is China, France, UK, US, Russia, and then plus one is Germany. So those countries and Iran agreed on a framework for a deal. So according to this framework, Iran would redesign, convert, and reduce its nuclear facilities and accept the additional protocol with provisional application in order to lift all nuclear-related economic sanctions, which frees up tens of billions of dollars in oil revenue and frozen assets. So, Devin, what the fuck does that all actually mean? That's a lot of jargon. Can you sort of distill it down? Yes.
So basically it means that Iran and agreed to end and or sort of limit its nuclear weapons program in exchange for lifting harsh economic sanctions. So these countries are basically like, we're not going to do business with you because you have this nuclear program. And so the Iran deal says, we will do business with you, but you have to limit your nuclear program.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. That's what they all agreed to.
And it was considered a landmark deal.
It was a big deal.
It was a signature achievement of President Obama.
Right, right. One of those things that Trump just fucking hates on principle.
So. Well, I was going to say, so now, you know, given that context, what does Trump want to do with all this right now?
All right, so he wants to pull out of the Iran deal ostensibly. But this is where the story gets a little complicated.
Mm-hmm.
So bear with me for a second.
Yeah.
Every 90 days... the president has to sign a recertification of the Iran deal, which basically says that I, the president of the United States, agree that Iran is holding up its end of the deal. So they've limited their nuclear program. And so we will continue to do business with them, basically. So Trump is now saying that he wants to not recertify. He's already signed recertifications twice since mm-hmm. taking office, since it's mm-hmm. every 90 days. And so right now he's like, nope, fuck it, not going to do it, don't want to do it. So it does kind of, if it feels like it comes out of nowhere, it kind of does. Because Iran is really holding up their end of the bargain, at least to the letter of this law.
Right.
So, you know, and then the Trump administration is saying, well, it's not adhering to the spirit of the law, which is de facto sort
what?
Of the logic is thin at mm-hmm, best. Mm-hmm. Right. So it looks like this might be a negotiating tactic. So, you know, even people who are proponents of decertification don't really want to reimpose sanctions. They just want to use this as a way to renegotiate a stronger deal. So basically,
and Trump thinks he's the king deal maker.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
It's just, I mean, there's no evidence that points to he knows how to make deals. I mean, he bankrupts his businesses every, you know, 5 years.
Right. Exactly.
that's my random estimate.
Right. Right. It's probably shockingly accurate, to be honest. But yeah. So, but the larger problem with this is that it damages our already sort of thin chances of nuclear negotiations with North Korea. Obviously, we're not headed in diplomacy in that area.
Yeah,
but
I remember Senator Kirsten Gillibrand saying that it really weakens our position with North Korea. And this is not really a great time to weaken our position right. with North Korea diplomatically.
Right. You're like assuming we even have a position to start with that we can even weaken.
Mm-hmm.
So this sort of unraveling of the Iran deal kind of makes negotiations with North Korea like not even like on people's radars. So Harvard's Graham Allison writes, quote, "For all its flaws, the nuclear agreement is the one major hurdle preventing Iran from becoming a second North Korea, a rogue state with nuclear weapons." So the Iran deal is working. It's working as intended.
As if we didn't need more sort of nervousness around nuclear weapons. We're just like, let's add another element to it because we have a fucking wild card of a president.
Right. Absolutely. And it's dicey. Very frustrating. It's very mm-hmm. dicey. So I guess let's kind of take it through a little bit. So what happens if Trump doesn't recertify, which the deadline was actually the 15th, which was today. So it looks like he didn't recertify. So what happens? Basically, nothing, right? Nothing practical. Him not recertifying just says, I don't think Iran is holding up its end of the bargain.
Mm-hmm.
So that's only half of the Iran deal, though. So he's saying Iran is not complying. The other part is we would then have to, you know, impose sanctions on Iran.
Well, that's what you would think. If you're saying Iran is not complying, then you would assume, well, the logic follows that we would have to impose new sanctions. But will that happen?
No, that's very, very unlikely.
You think he's just blowing smoke up everyone's ass?
100%. I mean, look, he's going to throw it to Congress, right? That's the plan here, is they're going to make Congress figure it out. And the thing is what it looks like from what like kind of aides and analysts are saying is that this basically looks like a compromise. Like the adults in the room, aka Mattis and Kelly, do not want to pull out of the Iran deal. So they're letting Trump kind of opt out of recertifying and making it Congress's problem. Because mm-hmm. now Congress has to then say, okay, we didn't recertify, so now we're going to impose new sanctions. Mm-hmm. But that's not going to happen. It's just not. They're not going to impose sanctions. They don't have the votes for it. Mm. There's no way that they're going to make that vote threshold.
Right.
So, and if McConnell has any sense, which let's not bank on that or anything, but he's not going to choose this moment to add another contentious issue to the table that he doesn't have the votes for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's just a big clusterfuck is what you're saying.
It is a big clusterfuck. That's yeah. a beautiful way to put it.
And it's, Iran's foreign minister was talking about this, and he was essentially saying that this just feels like America's word is not good anymore. By all accounts, Iran has complied with the terms of the deal.
Right. Absolutely.
And so for the United States to sort of, throw caution to the wind and try to blow shit up, yeah. like, they're like, what the fuck? And so, like, not only is Iran, like, your word doesn't seem, like, golden, but other countries around the world, I mean, they're already getting that vibe anyway, but they're going to see that too. Yeah.
I mean, we've already pissed off all of our allies.
Literally
and
everyone.
All of our non-allies. Literally everyone. Yeah. And so it's like, can you not? Like, is this the fucking moment we're going to add to this? Because we don't have the sort of political capital to fuck around with here. That's also what makes this sort of like playing with fire and the Iran deal that much scarier. Mm-hmm. Is that we don't really have the sort of standing on the world stage to do this.
Yeah, and I also, it's not a coincidence that the 2017 Nobel Peace Prize
right.
went to the international campaign to abolish nuclear weapons. I think that's pretty deliberate. All right, Devin. So as always, we really, really crave our gratitude checks. Yes. So what are you grateful for today?
Well, in light of Trump being the world's biggest ass clown,
God damn it.
I'm really happy that there's this push for women to run for office.
Yes.
It's kind of come subtly, kind of in my peripherals for a while. Like, I got an email from Onward Together that, Hillary Clinton was like, check out Emerge America, like training women to run for office. Mm-hmm. And just sort of hearing about, women in our Facebook group, women that I know running for office, joining teams, like joining political campaigns. And then Cosmopolitan has an article, 12 tips for a successful political campaign, mm-hmm. which I feel like that's, for me, when I saw that, that was such a moment, because Cosmo has this reputation and this sort of funny, like, 50 tricks for the best sex of your life, like that sort of thing, like
Cosmo
sort of,
sex tips.
Yeah, Cosmo.
There's
sex
a whole
tips.
Meme around that. Yeah,
right. There's like this whole vibe, and so I really think that this sort of call for women to run for office is such a great thing, right? And, yeah. and there's all, the whole old joke, which haha so funny, is that like women are too emotional to run for office. Women are can't lead because
L-O-L.
They throw temper tantrums. So
see 2017.
Yeah, right. So I think that, this push getting women to run for office, getting women into positions of power, maybe not as the candidate, but as chiefs of staff, as aides, as mm-hmm. as staffers, as legislative assistants, like getting women into these positions of power is the most wonderful thing that
yes.
has been happening. So yeah. that is what I'm really grateful for today.
Totally. Oh, love
so,
it.
So, yeah. So, Sarah, what are you grateful for?
I have a gratitude check along a similar sort of go women vein. my gratitude check last podcast was literally just women. Like, I yes. was like, thank you, women. Like, y'all are keeping me on top of my shit. It's actually a story out of the great state of California, our
Ooh.
Home state.
California.
So, California bosses can no longer ask you about your previous salary.
That's great.
And
that's so great.
Yeah. So it's a law that, is designed, to help narrow the gender pay gap in California. And I've seen similar laws get introduced or passed in other states. But basically, this law bars California employers from inquiring about applicants' previous salaries and benefits. So it's AB 168. And it really gives women the power to determine for themselves where they start negotiating.
Yeah. No, it's great.
Yeah. You know, the new law obviously applies to both men and women, but, you know, the intent behind it is to counter pay discrimination, which can have a sort of legacy effect as women change jobs. So if you start at a lower salary, then, you know, the next job that you go to, they're going to ask your salary history. That's already putting you behind. And then the next job you go to, you're already behind, you're behind. So I really like the framing behind laws like this. California is actually the fourth state. So Massachusetts, Oregon, and Delaware were states previously that that had laws similar to this. And it takes effect January 1st, 2018. So it's just, I love stuff like this because I think these can have, it seems like a small thing, but I think it'll have a significant impact. So speaking of the wage gap, Ijeoma Oluo had a great thread about it and sort of how it varies across races. It's something that you and I have talked about, Devin.
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, we sort of talk about how white women make 78 cents on the dollar to a white man makes. That number is obviously lower for black women, for Hispanic women.
Yeah.
And actually, the rate at which we've closed the gender pay gap in terms of white women, when I say we, it's been a faster rate than these other groups.
Right.
Yeah. So there's lots of, I think, again, intersectional issues around the wage gap. So laws like this, you know, they're going to be helpful, but it's not going to solve everything. But I do love the steps that state and local governments are making in this area. So that's what I'm grateful for today. Okay, Devin, so let's get into our listener gratitude check, which comes courtesy of Octavia from the Facebook group. She said, quote, "What may seem innocuous to many is a huge milestone for us. For most of my son's 20-month life, I suffered from debilitating postpartum depression and would hardly leave the house. Simple errands like going to the grocery store were completely overwhelming, so driving 45 minutes to the beach was not something I could even imagine. Having been off medication for over a year and on the other side of PPD, though it still lives on the edges, we finally made it to our local beach. What a fantastic day." And then she posted a bunch of really lovely photos of her and her family on the beach. And so we just want to say, Octavia, we're so glad to hear that you feel like you're on the other side of PPD and that you had such a great day with your family at the beach.
Okay, Sarah, so it is Monday, so it is time to get into our dickwad of the week.
Yes.
Sarah, who is our loser this week?
This one, like we said, we have lots of fucking feelings on this. our dickwad of the week is Mayim Bialik.
Yes.
And Devin, who is she and why is she our dickwad?
Well, she is an actress. Mm-hmm. She has been working in Hollywood for a long time. She was a child actor on Blossom, mm-hmm. and now she works on The Big Bang Theory. So she wrote an op-ed for the New York Times that it too long didn't read. She just victim-blamed the women who were assaulted by Harvey Weinstein. Mm-hmm. And this, to me, is the highest order of bullshit. When women victim-blame other women, like, you can take all the fucking seats.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I am not here for any of that.
Yeah.
So, and just this one passage that just made me so angry.
Yeah, read it. Read it, girl.
Ugh, quote, "And yet I have also experienced the upside of not being a, quote, perfect 10. As a proud feminist with little desire to diet, get plastic surgery, or hire a personal trainer, I have almost no personal experience with men asking me to meetings in their hotel rooms. Those of us in Hollywood who don't represent an impossible standard of beauty have the, quote, luxury of being overlooked and, in many cases, ignored by men in power unless we can make them money. Eat me, bitch, is all I have to say to that."
I am with you. I mean, being a feminist doesn't mean that you can't diet, get plastic surgery, hire a personal trainer.
Yeah.
And I also think it plays into abusers' language where, you know, men like Trump, like our goddamn president, have basically, you know, made arguments like, oh, this woman is basically too quote unquote ugly to rape. And like, right. that's the language right. of abusers. Like, do not yeah. co-opt this language and shame women.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's also worth noting, like, rape is not about sexual desire. It's about power and abuse.
Right.
So it's not about this sort of like this perceived standard of beauty or right. perceived value, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, the rage for me just continues. Mm-hmm. She said, quote, "In a perfect world, women should be free to act however they want. But our world isn't perfect. Nothing, absolutely nothing, excuses men for assaulting or abusing women. And here's where the but comes in. But we can't be naive about the culture we live in."
Mm-hmm.
This implication that we should change for ourselves as opposed to fucking men will never cease to piss me the hell off.
Well, we do have to change the culture. But yeah, we have to change ourselves. Let me tell you, no woman I know is fucking naive about the culture we live in. We're very aware.
Yes.
We're very aware. You shouldn't be writing an op-ed telling women that they need to do X, Y, and Z in order not to get raped. Because really what the answer is that men shouldn't rape.
Right. Exactly. And this sort of like implication that being a feminist means that you have to look a certain way or dress a certain way or present yourself a certain mm-hmm. way is just kind of like salt in that wound
right.
on top of everything else.
Yeah.
And she pissed me off 360 here.
Yeah. There was a lot going on. I think that her response to people's responses almost pissed me off more.
Yeah.
She said, quote, "I'm being told my New York Times piece resonated with so many and I'm beyond grateful for all the feedback. I also see a bunch of people have taken my words out of the context of the Hollywood machine and twisted them to imply that, God forbid, I would blame a woman for her assault based on her clothing or behavior."
That's exactly what you did.
I know. I'm like, literally, you wrote these words. You can't tell people they took it out of context. Like, you wrote them and you had an editor and you were like, yep, publish that. I feel good about that. And then she said, "Anyone who knows me and my feminism knows that's absurd and not at all what this piece was about." And it's like, bitch, we don't know you, actually. We're reading your op-ed and it doesn't seem like you get it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just, you know, I think that women, it's really disappointing to see women feed into rape culture and basically put this on the shoulders of other women, because honestly, it's really fucking up to men. Like, men just need to not be piece of shit assholes who assault, harass, and abuse women. It's just really that simple. Just don't do it.
Don't rape women.
Don't rape women. That's like, it's pretty simple.
Yeah. And the thing is so many women are sexually harassed and sexually assaulted that this sort of rhetoric makes it really difficult, even more difficult to talk about.
Yeah. And, it's interesting that you say that, because a bunch of women are posting under the hashtag #MeToo. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I have.
And it's basically the call to action is, if you've ever been harassed or assaulted, you know, and say #MeToo, because if we, you know, we might get the full sense of the scope of the problem.
Right.
And I think it's really powerful, right? Because I think it's still such a topic that gets stigmatized.
Yeah.
And we're made to feel ashamed about it when it's, you know, not on us. And I think that, yeah, like I said, it's powerful. But I also think there's been some really interesting counterpoints to it, saying that it still puts the onus on survivors and victims of harassment. I thought it was really interesting. Someone posted in response to that, "Did you?" Reframing the question to be about men doing it rather than women receiving it. "Did you harass, intimidate, sexually abuse, verbally abuse, belittle, not give a promotion to, pay less, discredit, catcall, or watch another man do any of these and not interfere? Every single woman I know is a Me Too."
Yeah. Well, I think that at least is part of this campaign, is showing that, I mean, I put Me Too on social media. Like, it's something that happens to almost every woman I've ever met.
Oh, yeah.
So I definitely understand, you know, a lot of times the way we talk about sexual assault and sexual harassment is phrased in the passive, right? Like, a woman was assaulted, not a man assaulted a woman. So,
right. And I also think it's important to note that it's not just women who get assaulted.
No, that's true.
You know, non-binary folks and men, certainly. But Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the conversation is around it happening to women because that's disproportionately who is impacted, right?
Right, right. And, you know, either way, no matter who's the assaulter and who's the assaulted, you know, framing it in that passive voice is definitely part of the problem.
All right, Devin, so let's get into some action items. So stuff that our Hellions can do after they listen to the show. So what's our first action item?
Y'all, we are talking about healthcare again, yep. Which I feel like a broken fucking record, but uh-huh. Here it is.
Yep.
So this is a little different this time. Because Trump used an executive order, we're a little limited on what we can do to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
Executive orders are kind of a beast to undo while the current president is still in office. It basically never happens. But we can call our attorneys general to tell them to take action against ending CSRs.
Yeah, and we talked about how a group of 19 attorneys general have already started to take action.
Right, and can, you know, they can file injunctions, they can get, you know, this possibly turned over and they can bring it to the Supreme Court. So I never thought that I would be pushing people to call their attorneys general. I didn't even really... You know, before this, I didn't even realize that was something one could do. And now I'm telling people to do it.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
But, you know, definitely call them and tell them to get on this no to ending CSRs train.
Mm-hmm.
So that is mm-hmm. definitely something you can do. And also, what we talked about, the shit pie trifecta, the HHS draft plan is accepting comments. The one that says that life begins at conception. You can comment on it until October 27th. And it's a long URL, but it's hhs.gov/about/draft-strategics-plan/introduction/index.html. So again, kind of a mouthful, but we'll link to it.
Our next action item is to call your reps about the Iran deal, and talk to them, make sure there's a plan in place to deal with Trump just trying to blow shit up, apparently.
Yeah.
So make sure you're talking to them about that. On a more local level, Virginia Hellions, there's a phone bank for Ralph Northam, who's a Democratic nominee for governor. So the governor's race is in less than a month, on November 7th. And we really need to make sure people get out and vote, because it's a really important election, and the guy he's running against is, like, especially a dickwad.
Yeah. Yeah, he's, like, next-level dickwad. So, yeah. Not okay.
So you can sign up for this phone bank at letamericavote.org or text Northam to 44939.
So last but not least, also we want to keep Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands at the top of everyone's mind. You can donate to Puerto Rico at unidosporpuertorico.com/en, and you can donate to the Virgin Islands at usvirecovery.org.
Yes.
So... yeah, so that is it for us today. And Sarah and I were talking about this, and we always struggle with our outros and sort of how to sign off the show. And yeah. Sarah had this great idea of, you know, looking for feminist quotes to end on a positive note. So our quote for today is by Audre Lorde. Quote, "I am not free while any woman is unfree, even when her shackles are very different from my own."
Yeah, and I would say that's a call for intersectionality if I've ever heard one.
Yes.
And, you know, we've talked about it throughout the show and today and throughout our podcast, but, you know, I think that as white women, Devin and I do a lot of trying to introspect as much as possible and decentering ourselves, and especially to the white ladies that listen to our show, we encourage you to do it again and again and again, and push yourself beyond your comfort zone. And
it's okay to be uncomfortable.
It's okay.
I'm uncomfortable a lot.
It's okay to be wrong. It's okay to be uncomfortable. You know, I thought that Brittany Packnett, she wrote an article for Vox shortly after the election where she talks about people being accomplices, not allies. And if you're not doing work that makes you feel uncomfortable, you're probably not doing enough. So I think that's just a good thing to think about constantly, and to work on bettering yourself every single day and trying to be a better feminist.
Yeah. So thank you so much for listening, and we will see you back here on Thursday. For more information on today's episode, including links to the articles we discussed and additional resources, you can visit us online at hellbentpodcast.com.
And you can follow us across social media platforms. We're at Hellbent Pod on Twitter and Instagram. We're Hellbent Podcast on Facebook. And if you want to join our Facebook group, we are facebook.com/groups/dickwadsbegone. You can also follow myself, Sarah Lerner, on Twitter, at Sarah Lerner. And you can also follow Devin on Twitter, at Devin Handy.
We also have a Patreon if you would like to support us that way.
Yes, and you can find us on patreon.com/hellbentpodcast, and your support would mean a lot.